You're listening to B2B Revenue Acceleration, a podcast dedicated to helping software executives stay on the cutting edge of sales and marketing in their industry. Let's get into the show.
Looking to grow your pipeline? Download the free SDR handbook from Operatix for insider tips and expert advice on how to launch, grow, and manage a successful sales development team. Head to operatix.net/SDR-handbook/ to download now.
Hi, welcome to B2B Revenue Acceleration. My name is Aurélien Moitier, and I'm here today with Chris Riston, CEO and co-founder of Flexpert. How are you doing today, Chris?
I am very, very good. Thanks, Aurélien. Yeah, great to be here. Excited for this one.
Pleasure to have you. Pleasure to have you. So today we'll be speaking about coaching, elevating SDR talent and ongoing coaching and development. So great topic. But before we get going, Chris, for the people who do not know you, could you please introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, of course. So Chris, obviously, still feels weird saying it, but CEO, co-founder of my own business, Flexpert. What we do, what we are, is we're an SDR consultancy and training company. So we have three core services, like consulting. We work with founders, sales leaders, help them build out their SDR functions, SDR team training programs, and then we do boot camps as well, which we've just started specifically for SDR leaders, junior leaders who are in their first roles and they're stumbling their way through it and thinking, oh, leadership's maybe not quite as sexy as I thought it was. So that's basically what we do. Before that, I've been in B2B SaaS for nearly 10 years for my sins. I know I look 18. Guys, I still can't grow facial hair. I've been in B2B SaaS sales for nearly 10 years, which is terrifying to say that I graduated from uni 10 years ago this summer. I live in the UK. I've got two dogs. My son was born 9 months ago. Wow. I got married, so I'm all grown up now, basically.
Yeah. You need to get you're gonna get one of those big cars soon. You know, you're gonna get an estate.
I mean, the business needs to go pretty well for me to do that in the southeast of England. But you have dreams, right? You have dreams, or just move up north here and
like adventure. You have we're on our third one, so I've got my third one coming in September. So three boys it would be, and it's going to be interesting because everything changed now. We've got to find a new car. We need to find a seven-seater. So you may see this coming around, you know, with my Ford Galaxy in no time.
Yeah, you do. And I'm told when you get past the second one, you start getting outnumbered. So
first one, if it's your first one, you're probably going to go to A&E, do a few trips down, you know, everything, a little cough, a little something, a little bit of drugs. The second one has just been, you let them bleed. You just let them be. We've had it all with our first one. But yeah, it's a great time. You know, 9 months is when I guess the kids become very, very interesting. And in fact, it's kind of leading me to a question. You know, if your son, when he gets to the age, and he wants to start a career in sales in, you know, 18 years from now, 20 years from now, what would be the main advice you would give him?
If he wants to start a career in sales, do it. 100% do it. And tell me about it, right? Because I was really, I didn't tell my dad for like 3 years after I was in sales. I just told him I was a consultant.
Yeah.
Just because I was so nervous about how much he hated salespeople. Because you know when you're younger and you've got everyone's around the dinner table and the phone rings, the house phone rings, no one has mobile phones, the house phone rings, and you're like, oh my goodness, that, who is this? Dad answers, it's a salesperson, he's immediately angry. That was my stereotype, that was my impression of salespeople. So going to uni and then deciding I didn't want to do my degree that I'd spent thousands of pounds on, and going to sales was like, oh, this is a bit awkward. I didn't tell him. Now he just told me you should, as long as you're happy, whatever. But to me, sales has also given me a completely different lifestyle than I actually thought was available. So, you know, why can't my son go and do that as well, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That makes sense. And you know, today we want to speak about coaching and development, but I guess from my perspective, everything starts from the recruitment process and, you know, finding the right people and all that sort of great stuff. And I can see that you're nodding like you agree with me, which is good. And I guess my first question would be, from your perspective, Chris, what are the key qualities and skill sets that you would want to look for in an interview process to find someone that obviously may not be at this stage a perfect SDR, but someone that can become the finished article?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's actually such a timely question because I just wrote or updated my SDR hiring playbook this morning, okay. so I could send it to someone.
Super fresh.
Super fresh, like really fresh. So I should know the 7 traits that I normally hire off, but everyone talks about, you know, hiring off behaviors. My background's in psychology, so I take that piece really, really, really seriously. I studied human behavior for like 4 years at uni, so I care about it a lot. With regards to hiring, seven things that I look for when I'm hiring SDRs or people I believe can be high performing SDRs are, first and foremost, curiosity.
Yeah,
that's something that I look for straight out of the blocks. Resilience, empathy, work ethic, will to win, extreme ownership, and emotional intelligence. They're my seven. The juice is all in the questions that you ask to draw those traits out. But
I was about to get there. So, well, how do you assess emotional intelligence? How do you? So for SDR manager that's listening to us, and I love that because I think this is the tricks of the interview. But and I would like also to ask you, how do you assess resilience? I've got my little techniques, but I want to hear from you, of course.
My favorite ever interview question is around curiosity. Just to start, I ask people to tell me something they know about either me or my business that I'm working at that I would be surprised they knew. Like and you get like so many, you know, random answers where it's like, oh, I've seen, you know, you've raised a Series B, and I'm like, well, everyone on LinkedIn has seen that we've raised a Series B because it's been all over that for like 2 weeks. But you end up drawing things out of people and ends up showing just how deep they've gone with their research and how much they care. That's one of my about this interview. That's one of my favorites, if not my favorite. In terms of emotional intelligence, probably top. There's loads of questions you can ask, but my favorite one is probably, tell me three things you would have done differently in this interview if you got another shot. And I asked that last out of the blocks. Why? Because it allows me to see if they've been able to perceive my emotions and my reactions to them and their answers in certain ways that have dictated whether they should have done better or worse than that. So they can manage, like they're looking at other people's emotions and they're able to actually take them on board and be able to react to them appropriately. So that's something that I look at for emotion intelligence, or that's an example. I'm looking for detail as well. Like I want them to go into detail. Resilience. So give me an example where this is a pretty classic one. A lot of people ask, but give me an example when you failed at something, but it has to be something you really wanted to be good at. The reason why I say, like, tell me something that you really wanted to be good at that you failed, is because it shows me persistence, right? Like, how much do you really want this sales career? And are you willing to go through essentially the revolutions of hell to get good at cold calling to make it happen? Yeah. Right. Tell me something else that you really, really wanted. And walk me through the pain, basically. And again, I'm looking for people to go into detail, not just say, yeah, I lost a football match once, so then we played again the next week and we won. I'm looking for people to say, you know, I was a gymnast, I finished second, so I went away, bought extra coaching, did an extra hour every single day on these very specific moves and maneuvers to be able to go and win that competition a year later. And like, that's dedication and persistence for me, not just, yeah, I kind of got up and just carried on playing. I wanted to go away and like and prove to me that they can actually reflect on failure as well and act on it.
Yeah, but the resilience is so important for us. We believe that this is probably one of the key traits and curiosity as well. I think curiosity is kind of the secret sauce that you either have or don't have. You can't make people curious. It's actually coming. I think it's coming from education. It's coming from background. It's coming from, you know, what happened to you before you actually come to the interview. But if you're not curious to the point of obsession, considering a career of sales in sales, it's going to be very difficult. You know, you need to have interest about your prospect and be passionate about knowing about them, because that's critical. But for the resilience, we actually make a recruitment process relatively difficult, quite frictionful, with maybe 3, 4, 5 steps in the process. We're going to get people to do like a mock-up call in the process. We probably would not prepare them too much. It's really about seeing how people are reacting when they are put a little bit under pressure as well. And one of my all-time favorite for resilience is, you know, after you've done 3, 4, 5 interviews and you've got someone who is good, here's the question. Say, well, it's not actually a question, it's a statement. Say, hey, Chris, you know what? Really like you on the personal level. I think you really try out during the interview, but something tells me you don't have what it takes to be successful here. And then you say nothing and you see the reaction. If they pack their bag and go, you may feel horrendous, but do not run after them. If they fight you, you stop them and say, okay, see you on Monday 9 a.m. And that's, I've had a fair few, even like in internal promotion, because that's really the interview I participate to now. And we had one in particular, one lady that was promoted in customer success, and she was not, you want to ask her the question, she literally, you know, she went to the net on the offensive and, you know, chopped my head off to tell me why I was so wrong. And I just said that this is great, because this is how I want you to. Don't take no for an answer. If it's not fair, you've got to stand up. And if you can stand up to me, you're going to stand up to clients or people. And, you know, we've got to hold our ground, right? So I think that's important. And do you, I like what you mentioned about telling them about the job, because I think this is what a lot of people don't do, almost conditioning people. And I was speaking with my head of people about that this morning, actually saying, well, are we actually clear in the interview process to tell them that the job we do is very difficult, not really sexy, and, you know, requires quite a lot of love for pushback and everything. And are we really clear with that? And I think we are not. I think we need to be much clearer. And sometimes we may be victim of selling the job a little bit. So I wanted to kind of move on to, how do you condition people? Because clearly SDR development, coaching, and all that stuff, how do you condition them to, okay, this is what's going to happen, this is what the coaching would look like. Do you start from the interview process as well, or is it more on the onboarding, or how do you go about it?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Like, people, for me, and hiring managers misconstrue like selling by maybe dressing up the job and just dressing up the business a lot, right? To try and get and win the best talent. It's so tempting to do that, right? You've got someone in front of you who's saying, cool, I've got 3 other job offers. Immediately, your default is you're going to say, cool, this is why we're so, like, why we're so amazing, why this is so amazing. I'm a huge believer in actually what is going to win that person's like heart and mind the most is, do they trust you with their career? All right. And with the trust, I'm extremely honest with people upfront about exactly what this is. Because part of an interview process for me is working out whether I can work with them. They, you know, obviously, you know, they can work with me, and it's got to be mutually valuable. But I've found that a huge part of selling is about honesty. Example for me, recently, right, we launched our new bootcamp. Someone came to me and said, hey, Chris, I don't know if this is for me for these reasons. And I said, I don't think it is. Right? That person, interestingly, then pushed back really hard on why and argued with me why it was for them. And I'm like, who's the salesperson here? Right. But I think that's part of the conditioning, right? So to speak, is actual just honesty about what the scenario is and what the situation is that person's coming into. I think we see this outside of SDR as well. It's just easier to convince SDRs it's the truth, because it's their often some of their first interviews that they've ever done. So they're, you know, like when I joined sales, I was really sold the dream and then immediately kind of delivered the nightmare on my first day, sort of thing, right? I just had no idea it was going to be what it was. Whereas, like, you know, you see this with senior leaders coming into businesses as well and then turning around being like, I'm told that everyone was on target. We've got like 4% of the team are on target. And it just sets people up for failure for me before they've even started, before you even get to the coaching piece and the development piece. I think we end up, and that also filters, the final thing I say on it is also filters into these false promises that we end up making SDRs around progression. So it's not just about what it is now that we're selling the dream on for SDRs. It's also about the future that we're selling the dream on as well. Because most of these people are looking at it as like, cool, I want to be an AE, I want to be a CSM, I want to be a leader. This is my like stepping stone into that into, you know, 1 or 2 years time. And we're saying to them, yep, you will get faster progression here than you will down the road. And then 6 months later, they're like, where's my progression? And then they get frustrated and leave, and your sales culture suffers because of it. And I see that the majority of businesses that I work with on a consultancy basis, because usually they're companies that have messed up their first or second attempts or even more at building that first SDR team. And it's usually stemmed from this like core part of hiring. You get that right, then the rest is becomes so 100 times easier.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack here. Really good answer to my question. And I want to focus mainly on the kind of the career development path. And I'd like to understand your thoughts about how do you align that also with the company goals? Because there is always objective and it's kind of mission of the company, mission of the team, and mission of the individual. And you know, technically leader come last, in my opinion, at least. So how do you align that? And also, you mentioned the 6 months, which is, I think there is maybe like a generational stuff going on at the moment where people are really keen to progress very quickly. You know, the gratification is super quick and finding it difficult sometimes to have conversation with people. I say, look, you've not mastered it because you've done it once. You had a good month. Doesn't mean that you cracked it. You need to have 12 good months. Consistency is key. And then you can go, you know, one win, everybody can do that. You know, you took the analogy of football early on. You could put the worst team of player and on a good day, they could beat the best team of the league, right? But can they do it consistently? Can you do it over and over and over again? So I guess it's two sides here. One side, which is how do you align with the goal of the company and how do you make sure that you timestamp? Do you have a handshake in saying, look, it won't happen in 6 months? This is what we do. We can say, look, you're going to be promoted here because this is what we do. We promote from within. We're big on that. Everybody does. I'm a product of it. All of my managers are a product of it. We literally, every single leader at Operatix has started at the bottom. So, but it's a time frame. People get so anxious about doing it so quickly. And so there's two things really, alignment with the company objective and then setting up time frame that are reasonable so people actually master what they are doing before they can actually progress.
Yeah, I think you're right, especially on the time frame piece. So the way that I think about it, or the way that I've built it before, for like when I didn't have my own business and I was, you know, building big SDR teams, was how do you bring those goals all together? I think that's the challenge for leaders. How do you bring them all together into like one framework? So I built that framework before, and the way that I did it. It's very simple. I think people overthink it, but I found people overthink it, including myself when I first tried it. This is what I've refined it to, was three stage process for everyone. First and foremost, like before they even start the process for people at the business, I'm telling people in interviews that just so you know, before you like sign this contract or anything like that, when they ask me the question, okay, how quickly can I get promoted? I'm not going to give them a time frame. I'm going to tell them what the framework is. So then I'll tell them the framework that they'll go through, and they have a clear understanding even before they've started, so they can make their decision on whether this is the right business and therefore the framework they want to go through. And I'll say to them, this is what it is. So stage one is what I would call ramp up. This is 0 to 3 months. Your job in this or your part of the bargain is to ramp up. That is all it is. Nothing else. No smashing, anything and getting promoted immediately. Like, it's just, I want you to just focus deeply on ramping up. And yeah, go and beat the ramp goal or the ramp, target that we've set and what the best person's ever done. What you want to be at the aim, great. But just focus on ramp 0 to 3 months and doing that as quickly as possible. Once you've done that, then you'll move into phase two, which is what, weirdly, you said consistency. I actually call it consistency. So obvious, right? On the tin. And I'm like, from 3 to 12 months, unless you're absolutely exceptional, and exceptional equals you are over 125% of target every month, then you will be in the consistency bucket. Consistency is on your behalf. It is just proving to the business you can hit target consistently as an SDR for that period of time. And from my perspective, what I'll be giving you is I'll give you training every week, one-to-one every week, all these extra things. That's my part of the bargain, and that's all my manager's parts of the bargain. That's your part of the bargain. If you complete that and you show the right behaviors, you're not a complete arse along the way, then what you'll move into is stage three. And this is the most interesting stage for me, is because you've earned the right now. You've been consistent. You've proven that you've got the skills to be successful in SDR. You're going to go into stage three. And stage three is what I call acceleration. We have a conversation at the top of stage three, and you tell me where you want to go. Do you want to go AE, leadership, CSM? I'll then tell you and give you some insight into what we know about the hiring plan for those sort of roles at this stage, but I still won't commit a time frame for you. It's just 12 months plus. Within that, now I know that you want to be, example, as an AE, we'll then start working together for an hour or two a week on AE skills. The rest of the time you need to execute on your SDR job, but a couple of hours a week, now you've earned the right for us to then start working on AE skills with you, or CSM skills, or whatever that is. And once a month, you'll be seconded to the AE or the CS team for however long until junior roles come up within those teams. Mm-hmm. So I second people out for a day a month, and they also get a couple of hours a week just on like discovery or running a demo. What I want is them to prove that they have AE or CSM or leadership skills before they go into to interview for these roles. That's it.
I think that's critical, Chris. I think the what we realize that it's almost like, well, you are born a boy, so you're supposed to play with little cars. You are born a girl, you're supposed to play with dolls. And I think there is a preconceived idea that if you're an SDR, you should become an AE.
Yeah.
And we see so many SDRs that actually would never be. It's such a different role. Technically, it's selling, but it's a very different hit of dopamine as well. You can take 6 months, 9 months to actually succeed in closing something. And for most of the people that close big deals, they will always tell you, look, I don't feel anything special because it's been so hard and procurement actually beat us up so bad that we don't think anything. And I don't think people really appreciate that sometimes. And it's super important to almost give them a taster. Now, I'd like to understand how you do it, because do you have like a competency framework? I mean, this is what we use. We've got a competency framework, and then we look at people, we assess them, and then we tell them this is how you score versus all the competency that we need. And based on that, we kind of develop a tailored plan. Do you do something similar?
Yeah, exactly. So if they want to be an AE, then either a list of skills called competency framework, and every month that they're in the stage three acceleration phase, because we're training and working on them, we reassess them on these skills. We're assessing them on these skills all the time, right? So like part of the hour or two a week that they're practicing is this repetitive movement of run discovery calls to me, role play, run demos to me, like role play, et cetera. Where I see a lot of companies fall down is they'll either just promote people and they've never assessed their competency or skills. They were just the best SDR. Or they'll just be like, right, well, you know, this person's right for the role because they've got certain behaviors. And I see that a lot in like when the people are hiring managers as well.
Yeah.
I think this person is right because, you know, they're just good with people. So they should be a good manager. And they go through the ranks really, really, really quickly because they want to. Obviously, like, you know, when we were 23, 24, if someone said, hey, Chris, like, you know, hey, Aurelien, do you want to be a leader of the team? Here's a head of job title. You're like, yeah, great. And then how many times do we see heads of SDR, but they've never managed a team before? They've never even been a team lead or a manager or a senior manager, never mind a head of. And then the expectation that's pushed down them is, so the board says we need 10 million in pipeline by end of quarter. Is that all good? And you're like, oh my goodness, what do you mean? Didn't even know 10 million existed as a number. And I see this so often, right?
It is common. In terms of the things that you track along the way, what would be the, you know, coming back to coaching, how do you measure the effectiveness of coaching? Because you are big on KPIs and plans and everything. So do you actually have an assessment when you also assess the coaching element and how the coach are doing?
Oh, absolutely. It's so important that I feel really hypocritical if I was just assessing all the SDRs and wasn't assessing my managers. I'm almost more critical on the managers than I am on the SDRs, actually. The couple of things that I'll be looking at here is I have a competency framework for managers. So like, can they actually train people? And are they getting better at being able to train people, as an example? Because how many times do we see this? We promote people to management roles, and then the number one thing on the job description is train people into high-performing SDRs. And then they've never trained anyone or any training or educated anyone on anything ever in their lives. And we're expecting them to be like qualified teachers. Right? And it's like, what? Of course we are. One of my things is like, yeah, we've got to train you on how to train. I know it sounds really simple, but yeah, it's frameworks for the managers, absolutely competency works. But the other thing that I'm looking at is, okay, are the managers moving the needles with their reps in terms of their the reps competencies as well? And then are we able to then link those competencies to increases in results? Right, because you know, the managers could say, yeah, this rep's gone from a 4 to a 5 in cold calling. You're like, but they booked less meetings from more conversations last month. So how did that happen? So you've got to tie it to the result, not just the manager's assessment of them as well. So yeah, it's slightly complex in that way, but it's so worth the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah. One of the big things that we're trying to do is to develop that sort of cross mindset, because I think you can create the best environment possible and coach people and stuff like that. But, you know, we're not the good one. They are like the Ronaldo of this world. They are the Kobe Bryant of this world, rest in peace. You know, because you know, training is finished. They're going to go and train again. They're on training. They've got their own personal trainer after the training. They keep on going and, you know, and I would like to know from you if you've got any way to get that gross mindset going from people. So not just, I guess what I'm trying to say is that how can SDRs almost have that sort of willingness to learn by themselves? You know, you don't want people to always look up and say, well, I'm going to go to Chris to coach me to be good at it. How do you get them to have that gross mindset sort of thinking and they can seek formal coaching versus waiting for the coaching to happen to them?
One of the things that I used to do with all reps was, or all SDRs, even when I was just managing managers, was that I'd always make sure I have skip levels with all of the reps at least once a quarter. Even if that sounds a lot, but even when I had like 50 plus reps, I would always have a skip level with them at least once a quarter.
What do you mean by skip level? Sorry, I'm not familiar with
it. So I would have a one-to-one with the SDR rather than just the managers.
Yeah.
What that allowed me to do was exactly this piece, right? Like I wanted to encourage them to be better in some way, but I knew and I know that that's got to start with them. So what I want to understand in a lot of those one-to-ones is, okay, how much do they, like, where do they want to go? How much do they actually want it? Because if they have that passion for wanting to get to some sort of end goal, then it's so much easier to encourage them to go and get after it, all you need to do when they've got the passion is just open a couple of doors for them and they just run through. But the people who don't really want it, you can open the acid test is you open the door and they just still stay. And like you see that so often with people, right? Where you're just like, okay, so tell me, what do you want? And you will come back and like that. I really just desperately want to be an AE. And I'm like, cool, I'll introduce you to these three people, set up one-to-ones with them and pick their brain. They're all friends. They're all really, really good. They want to give you time for free. And they're just like, yeah, sure. 3 weeks later, they've not, you know, I messaged these three people. Have you heard from, you know, Billy Bob? And they say, nope, haven't heard. I'm like, there's the acid test.
I'm with you. I'm completely with you. Is that I'm quite regularly, I've got someone coming to me and say, hey, I want to be part of the operatic sales team. So I want to be promoted from being an SDR on behalf of our clients to actually sell operatic services. And my feedback is like, wow, look, what I look for is go-getter, people who just do it. So why don't you do it? Right? Just work with our sales director, probably pick 3, 4, 5 accounts, maybe 10 accounts, call them. Tell them that you are working as a rep, that you would like to get the meetings, you would like to be promoted in sales team. Be very honest with them. And they probably would like that if you speak to a sales guy. And tell them that you want to set up a meeting and we do the meeting together. And like you, you'd never heard of them again. And that's such you need to go and get stuff. You know, life should not happen to you. Yeah. It's not a real soul. You've got to go and do it, you know. And that's almost what we say when we promote, which is what I like, what you're saying about, you know, 1 or 2 hours. People need to see what it looks like before they actually do the job. You know?
Oh, my goodness.
Because wanting to manage people, I remember feeling so bad after 6 months when I actually realized that people don't do as they are told. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, just like, I'm the manager. I'm just going to ask you to do something, Chris. I'm your boss. I'm the boss, right? I'm asking you to do something. If you don't do it, what do I do? Do I get annoyed?
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Am I the little chief? And I had the wrong perception. I was a little chief. He gave me a certain level of arrogance in a way. And he would help me to, you know, basically I just ask people to do something and they go and do it for me. And that's how it works. And then you realize, no, actually you need to keep people inspired. You need to keep them involved. You need to manage them by, you know, empowering them and things like that. And oh God, this is so complicated. And the leadership is actually, I'm still on the journey, to be honest with you. I'm learning every day about it because it's such a complex thing to do. And also you've got to adapt to every single individual. Every single person is different. So I'm 100% with you on the, hey, you know what? You want it? Here is a little test and you see if they do it or not. And the people who are not go-getting, they just want it, but not really to put the work in.
Yeah, exactly. And that's that combo for me of like those two core values in the first place on hiring. It always goes back to there for me. It's like, will you know, that will to win and that work ethic piece. Like that, the combo of different values for me is really, really important because they're so much stronger together.
But how do you assess the will to win? Like for early stage, again, interview process, because everybody will tell you in a sales interview that they want to win. Everybody could put a good show for 1 hour. You know that you interview people, yet they are not themselves at the interview process. They put a social mask on or whatever. Even if you try to create a safe space, it won't be a safe space. So how do you assess that? Because I guess you can't just ask the question and say, do you like winning? Because past experience, like you were...
I think your question... I'll tell you what mine is, but I think your question, when you the upfront challenge, right, of I'm not sure this is right for you, the way people react to that is the difference between someone who's okay with drawing or losing, right? And then we'll say stuff like, I'm okay with it because we only lost by 1 goal last week rather than 3 goals. And I'm like, that's not okay for me. Like, you should be wanting to win every game and not be okay with failure. The way one of the things, and this gets so many different answers, but you've got two egg products that are exactly the same.
Yeah.
Right. Which one are you able to sell more of and why? Right. Like you've got to pick one and you've got to sell it more. But why? Like tell me, go into detail why you'd be able to sell that one more. They're exactly the same. All right. And then it's really interesting how creative people can get. People who aren't willing to go above and beyond and get creative and think of ways to win. Right. Because I think with salespeople, you've got to think on your feet in terms of how can I, my competition is not just the competitive company down the road. It's the salespeople in that company that I'm competing against. I need to outthink them. So when you've got two salespeople, how, you know, they look exactly the same, both graduates, both went to Oxbridge, whatever, but which one can outthink the other one? That's what I want to know with the will to win, is like that extra 2-5% that's going to get the deal over the line or not. And that's why I give them, you know, you've got two products exactly the same. Tell me, you know, tell me why yours wins.
Yeah. And I want to shift gear a little bit here. You know, things have become very remote recently.
Yeah, yeah.
Recently, I just don't know. Let's not speak about COVID because it's over now. But people like to work remotely, particularly, I think, in the UK in particular. In the US, we see people coming back in the office, but they've always been a little bit flexible in the US with that. How have you adapted your coaching to that? Because I think people in the room would still always be my favorite option. I think you can really create an emotional bridge when they're in the room. You can have a bit of small talk. You create relationship. How have you adapted your coaching to the remote working?
I think it's important to have adapted everything, not just the coaching. I think the overall thing is, with more freedom must come more responsibility.
Yeah.
And I view remote work as that is more, it's more freedom, but it must come more responsibility. So actually the aim of the game for me is, you know, producing slightly more disciplined teams. And teams that I would trust. So when I break that down into like coaching, development, training, what I like to give people is even more frameworks for them to be able to operate within. Right. But my view, being totally honest with you, is I don't think you can fully replicate the training room online, right? I just don't think you can do that. But I think how you can adapt to it, if that is your company's ethos, and it's my ethos as a person, right? Like I fully work remote and do all my work remote, it's all about giving people frameworks to be able to work within. And this is where I see, you know, examples all the time when people are like, cool. So yeah, let's practice cold calling on this training session. They do some cold calling and they do, you know, some role plays back and forth. Yeah. But then what are the people actually leaving with, right? That they can then go and implement. I see that in both remote and non-remote settings. I think that's the biggest issue, is like you do the session and then no one takes anything away that's an actual framework or a system that they can stay within. So they just go everywhere and do anything again. And for me, that's one of the highest impact things that I've adapted to, is I don't just deliver the session. I also have now cheat sheets, not just for the reps, but also for managers as well. So how can managers at manager level then back up everything that I teach also? There's always the same message, whether that is on Slack, whether that is on line, or whether that's in person. Like you're constantly getting reps are constantly getting the same message. And for me, it doesn't matter whether they're getting that message 80% in person or 80% online, as long as it's the same message and it's consistent, then we can build trust that this is the right way of going about it.
Yeah, makes sense. Last question for you, Chris. You know, for anyone that would listen to us and is coaching people, top three coaching tips, things that, you know, people may not think of that you've found very useful in situation. I'm sure you have plenty of stories and plenty of situations, but what would be your top three coaching tips in terms of practical things to do that you would suggest to any managers that are listening to us right now?
Yeah, my number one thing is stop judging people by what you like. Start judging people by what your prospects like, right? How many times do we hear this, right? We're sat in rooms and then we'll maybe say to an SDR and AE, what was your feedback for the other AE or the other SDR? And they're like, I really like the way you said that. And I'm like, no, because that's way off a way off structure, way off, way off framework, right? It's not about what you like. It's about what works. That's that for me is number one. Number two is frameworks, and don't change them too often, right? With cold calls, with emails, with video, right? Think about frameworks that you can use that the reps can actually master. Because if you're constantly changing everything all the time, your reps are never going through those four stages of learning. They're never moving from consciously incompetent, where they feel like they're shit and they are a bit shit, to consciously competent, where they need to think about what they're doing and execute. That for me is really, like, really, 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 really important. I think, like, my third top tip for coaches, for coaches and managers. I know this sounds so simple, but actually make it happen, right? Like, there's a shocking stat that managers, SDR managers, spend less than 5% of their week coaching their reps.
Mm.
That is outrageous for me.
I think salespeople are the polar opposite of athletes. You know, an athlete will train 5 days a week to play an hour and a half at the weekend, if I'm talking football here. We do the opposite. Yeah. We are working and never, you know, sometimes we don't train at all.
Yeah, at all for weeks and weeks on end. I think the key thing about actually executing on the training, though, for all managers that are listening, is you need to think about what you are going to train on, but most importantly, why are you doing that? So to go back to some of the strategic goals that we were talking about earlier at business, wide level for the business, right? Why are you training cold calls this week if all the team are smashing cold calls, right? Maybe train on something else that's a gap, but use the data around you to train on the biggest gap areas and fill those gaps. Or, as I would call it, or I teach managers to think about, not just your gap areas, but your highest impact areas, right? Like, that's what you want to think about. Like, sometimes, you know, you could train a rep, you know, until you're blue in the face on email, but they're just never going to get cold email, right? Or you could train them on calling and double the amount of meetings they're booking on calling, right? But you're gonna have to find that out as a manager as well. They're my top tips.
Yeah, I did say it was my last question, but I'm gonna carry on. How do you coach top performer that think that they don't need training because it's going well? And then the reason why I'm asking you that is because I do strongly believe in something called the sigmoid curve, which is you need to reinvent yourself when you're at the top of your game. And not when you start failing, because when you start failing, it's too late and it takes time to readjust. So instead of going like that, you could just go like that a little bit more, you know. So, but it's so difficult. It's so difficult to lead people and to ask them to do more when they're successful. It's actually easy to lead people in crisis. But when everything is fine, and I'd like to know how you go about coaching the good one or the performing reps that may think that they don't need your coaching.
So first and foremost, it goes back to this framework that they're in, right? If they're a top performing rep, usually they're in the consistency or the acceleration phase. So I feel comfortable that they have some motivation, right? That they either need to go from consistency to acceleration. So they're fighting for it. If they're top performing and they're not fighting for it, I have question marks over that. And I will talk to them about it. That's more on a values level for me than anything else. If they're in acceleration, they're not fighting for it, I'm like, well, why would I make you an AE, right? I know that sounds very simple, but like I in my mind, you can see I'm very process-led, but I know where all the reps are at any one point in the process of moving through the ranks. And that is the biggest needle that I can move, is with regards to the accelerating their career. And they know that because they're in a certain, you know, kind of hamster wheel, so to speak. But I think one of the other things that I think about when reps are, you know, they think that they're too good, and this almost sounds like the anti curve. I have successfully let them fail. Why? Because I want to teach them a lesson. And it's important sometimes that I do that. So example, people who ramp the fastest, data-wise, in my teams, people who have ramped the fastest have not necessarily gone on to be the best AEs in 18 months' time, something like that. Right? They've got out the blocks really, really quickly, and then they've kind of dropped off, or they've hit a brick wall and plateaued. Interestingly, people who have ramped like slightly slower, still hit their ramp, but slightly slower, have kind of gone like this, but they've failed a lot along the way. So they've almost built this immune system up of like to failure and resilience. That for me, I think, is also the job of a manager sometimes, is to be like, and now I'm finding, you know, this as a parent, being like, okay, my son's 9 months, he's trying to walk. And I'm like, okay, I can hold you up, or I can let you fall down a couple of times. Then you're going, because I know you're going to get back up and learn again, or go again. Like sometimes with SDRs, I think it's really important that they do learn some of these lessons.
100%.
But I always say to them, I am going to let you fail at some points, by the way, but I won't let you go over the edge. I'll come in at some point, but I will let you fail so you learn. And usually that for me is worth, earlier on especially, letting them or at some point letting them do it, because it's worth them learning for the longer term. And I see that with people who they reflect on it and they come back and they say, here's where I should have done differently, I should have prepared better for going on holiday or whatever it was, right? Like we see all the time. Yeah, that's how I the two ways that I look at it.
Super useful, Chris. Thank you so much for sharing your insight with us today. If anyone wants to get in touch with you to carry on the conversation, or you know, potentially work with Flexperts and use your services and stuff like that, what's the best way to get hold of you?
Yeah, best way of getting hold of me is just follow me on LinkedIn. I like to give people loads and loads of free stuff before we engage. That's just the way that I roll these days. So yeah, I have loads of free guides, and my newsletter's free, goes out every week. I think that's probably a good place to start for people to get to know me as a person, figure out if I'm someone they want to work with.
Good. Well, thank you so much, Chris. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today.
Yeah, thanks, Redden.
You've been listening to B2B Revenue Acceleration. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.
Looking to grow your pipeline? Download the free SDR handbook from Operatix for insider tips and expert advice on how to launch, grow, and manage a successful sales development team. Head to operatix.net/SDR-handbook/ to download now.